Okay. I am excited that this is my first talk, that has an actual farmer as a co-author. So I'm excited that not only am I doing research, but I'm actually getting it onto the field. In fact, one of the last study I'm going to be talking about today was inspired by this farmer and participated in by this farmer. So that was my first farmer participatory research, and it was very exciting for me. He had been listening to some results that I was discussing that I had gotten with myself and Dr. Joe Hoischley, who was a postdoc with me at that time. She's now in Minnesota, that we got in conjunction with Aaron Smith, who's in Louisiana. I was discussing some the results of my research, and the farmer was listening, and he asked some questions, and it was just very exciting what came out of that. So today I want to talk about first I want to say the previous speakers have been talking about how to add fertilizer to increase an element of interest. I'm the opposite. I'm trying to keep an undesirable element out of the grain. So I flip your thinking here, okay? Totally flip your thinking here. I can't put more arsenic out there because that's not what I want. I've got to think about what can I do to the field that will keep the arsenic that's already there out of the grain. So I'm going to talk first about how does arsenic travel through from the soil to the grain, so that we can think about how might we, this pointer is very slow, I'm going to switch to the other pointer, so we can talk about how might we find ways to block that flow. And I'm going to talk about some growing evidence that there is sequestration of the arsenic, and that's a process that involves several sulfur-containing compounds. And that led to the question that the farmer raised, will sulfur fertilization further decrease my grain arsenic concentrations? So that's the final study I'll be talking about. So we're trying to figure out how to get minerals from here into the bowl, but we don't want the arsenic and the cadmium and sodium to do that. We want to block those somewhere. Some terms I'm going to use today is inorganic arsenic versus organic arsenic, and the reason for that is it's the inorganic arsenic, the mineralized arsenic that is most toxic to humans as well as to plants. The organic arsenics, and one of the most common ones in rice is DMA, dimethyl arsenite. So that is 100 times less toxic than the inorganic arsenic. So this is the arsenic that we're worried about. Unfortunately, this costs about $200 a sample to analyze. So I often do a lot of my work over here with the total arsenic, which is the sum of the inorganic and organic, because I can get this for about $20 a sample. So I'm trying to use this data to infer this data along the way. I'll be reporting most of my data in parts per million, in fact, all of my data in parts per million, and I've done all of my grain analyses, my total arsenic analyses, and the inorganic arsenic analyses I've gotten were done in brown rice, which has both the bran and the germ intact, as well as the endosperm. So if I forget to tell you this stuff later, I've told you now. So how does arsenic get from the soil into the plant? And then we're going to talk about the sequestration and metabolism in the plant and grain loading. But first I want to start here with how does it get it into the plant. Iron is bound in the soil with iron. I mean, arsenic is bound in the soil with iron oxides. And what we find is when we flood the soil, the arsenic becomes, instead of arsenate, it becomes arsenite. It gets reduced from the redox of the flooded soil chemistry, and arsenite is much more available to the plant because it enters the plant through the silica transport. Rice loves silica. It takes up a lot of silica. So it's not that rice loves arsenic. It's that the flooding makes arsenic available, and it happens to slip through a transporter that rice does like to take up, silica. And as we flood the soils, the iron oxides, the arsenic is also less bound. The arsenite is not bound as tightly to the iron oxide, so it becomes available under the flooded conditions. But there's also some microbes that go on that continue this process, so that the arsenate to arsenite and the release is pretty fast in a flooded soil. But we have a continued increase of arsenic availability through the growing season, and that's caused by these microbes. As we continue to reduce the oxygen in the soil over flooding time, the populations of microbes that scavenge oxygen off of other compounds, and particularly iron, become more and more. The populations of these microbes grow in our fields, and as they increase the population and snitch more oxygen off the iron, what they're doing is releasing the arsenic. So we see a continued release of arsenic in the fields, and that seems to increase over time in our fields. So this alone tells us some things that we might block arsenic uptake and transport. We could put phosphorus fertilizer out there and block the uptake here. Yeah, there are studies that show you can block arsenic uptake by adding phosphorus. If you add enough of the phosphorus, you can block that. But that's not really the process that most of our rice sees. Most of our rice is getting the arsenic through this system, which would require silica fertilization. And sure enough, Angelia Sefarth at Delaware is studying the application of rice husks. Rice husks are very concentrated in silica. So she's applying rice husks and rice ash to the soil to see if this silica can inhibit the uptake of arsenic. And she's finding some good results out of that. Unfortunately, what she's doing at the rate of husk application she's using, it takes about 5 acres of rice husk to be harvested in order to treat 1 hectare, so it's a 5-to-1 process. That's not very maintainable by our farmers in the long run, so this is still preliminary. She hasn't figured how much lower she can go on this yet. That's being studied, and we're right now it's not very feasible on a large-scale system. But the other solution would be just don't flood your rice. Grow it aerated and see what happens. And in truth, this is a management scheme that our farmers are using today, not just in the U.S., but around the world. In Bangladesh, they've gone to this system that we call intermittent flood or alternate wetting and drying. And what you do is instead of flooding the field and keeping it flooded, you flood the field and let it evaporate down, and then flood the field and let it evaporate down. We're still doing studies on how dry can you let it go before you risk your yields, and all of our decades of research for weed control and so forth have been in this condition. So when we move to these field conditions, we need to learn more about weed control, we need to learn more about disease and insect control, and what we do know is certain weeds definitely bloom under this condition. There are certain diseases that certainly bloom under this condition. So we don't have varieties today that are bred specifically to be optimized under this condition, because we've been breeding for the diseases and weeds that are blooming up there instead. Hybrid rice is somewhat new to the U.S. In Arkansas now it's about 80% of the acreage. In Texas it's more like 40% of the acreage. So it depends on where you are in the U.S. as to how much hybrids are grown. They're still increasing in acreage in the U.S. So those points we talked about before just really aren't working out. The don't flood is still in process and in research. We're still trying to optimize that system. But we've got farmers actually running that system today in their fields. They're helping us optimize that system with their trial and error. But there are other things that we can learn about if we look at the sequestration and grain loading process. What can we learn about in the plants and the biochemistry here, whether we're using genes or other methods to tweak this system? What can we do over here in the sequestration area is what the rest of my talk will be about. As a geneticist, my first question was, where in the world are the genes that cause low grain arsenic? And so we studied 1,800 things from around the world, 1,800 accessions from around the world, and you can see that there's wide variability in arsenic concentration this is total arsenic concentration in the brown rice, a wide variability in that, and it happens to be associated with heading date is when we're under the flooded condition. And that's consistent with what I told you earlier about the increase of the microbe population that scavenges the oxygen off of the iron and releases the arsenic continuously over time. So the things that are in the field a long time get exposed to more arsenic than things that are in the field a short time. And what that told me as a geneticist is that if I'm going to select things to study high grain arsenic versus low grain arsenic, I can't just study the highest grain arsenic and the lowest grain arsenic I find, because I might be looking instead at a time of exposure difference. So when I select my lines for high grain versus low grain arsenic, I select them in equivalent heading date groups. The other thing we did, we studied this under flooded and unflooded conditions, and under the unflooded conditions, you'll see that the arsenic is just very low. It's down here underneath the graph of the flooded graph. So the concentration of arsenic over here, there's a codex, the WHO has announced a codex of 0.2 parts per million, and this is under every single variety, whether it was a high arsenic grain or a low arsenic variety, under flooded conditions, every single one of these 1,800 lines was lower than the codex level under unflooded conditions. And so if we can go to purely unflooded conditions, not alternate wetting and drying, but purely unflooded, we can instantly get our rice down in arsenic. But there are other concerns, like I said, the weeds, the diseases, and cadmium now becomes more of a concern for rice under unflooded conditions. So here I took, I couldn't study 1,800 things all the time, so I found a subset of 8 accumulators. I'm going to call these accumulators because they accumulate arsenic in their grains, versus these seem to exclude arsenic out of their grains. So I studied 8 accumulators versus 9 excluders in the next study. And what we did here is we collected the flag leaves before and after grain fill, and then when we could, we harvested grain. When we added arsenic to the soil, so we studied this under two different soil conditions, native soil, which is just the standard field plot out in the research station, versus an area where we add arsenic every other year. We add arsenic to this part of the field because there's a disease in rice called straighthead, and if we add MSMA, an arsenic-containing herbicide, we can induce that disease. So for the last 50 years, every other year, they've been adding arsenic to this piece of the research station. It has obviously accumulated arsenic over time. The arsenic in the soil here is about twice as high as the arsenic in the soil here. Now we're adding methylated or organic arsenic, but the microbes essentially turn the organic arsenic into inorganic arsenic by the next growing season. So what we have added one year becomes inorganic arsenic by the time we grow rice there again every other year. But when we looked at, so this is in the native group where we were able to get seed on everything. The grain excluders have lower arsenic in their grains. But when we look at the flag leaves, there's an interesting difference in pattern. Those that keep arsenic out of the grain continue to accumulate arsenic in their flag leaves from before to after grain fill. So during grain fill, these plants are pumping arsenic into their leaves, versus those that have higher arsenic in their grains are pumping the arsenic out of their flag leaves from before grain fill to after grain fill. So it looks like if we can retain and even accumulate arsenic in the flag leaves during grain fill as opposed to pumping it out, we should be able to decrease grain arsenic. That led to the next study with Joe Hoischle, the postdoc, who wanted to look at the metabolic compounds within the accumulators versus the excluders to see if they have a metabolic difference in how they respond to arsenic exposure. Does the arsenic exposure increase certain pathways here? Now, in the detoxification sequestration process, this glutathione, GSH, is a main player. But not only is it a main player in detoxification sequestration, it's a main player in mitigating the injury from reactive oxygen species and so forth. So we had to study it not just in terms of where is it going in terms of detoxification, but how is it getting used also in mitigating the injury of the heavy metals. So Joe Hoischle here has this process. So she was growing plants in hydroponically, exposed to arsenic or not. They had this very quick process where at 0, 24, 48, and 72 hours after arsenic exposure, they were collecting leaf and root samples very quickly so that they could into tubes that were dropped into liquid nitrogen so they could study those metabolic compounds and find out what was happening in the excluders versus the accumulators over time. One of the first thing we found was we wanted to ask, is arsenic going into the accumulators faster? No, the excluders and accumulators have the same amount of arsenic in their roots, and pretty much they were identical, even though increased over time in both accumulators and excluders. The accumulators and excluders were equal over time, so we did not see a difference in uptake rates in our germplasm that we were looking at. We didn't see a difference in the transfer rate from the roots to the shoots either. So that pointed us in this direction, sequestration. And that was then where we were studying the detox sequestration compounds. And sure enough, in the roots, we find that cysteine increased, and it was induced by arsenic. In other words, it increased more than the control plants. So it was induced to increase more in cysteine. Glutathione didn't increase, but the phytochelates did. So that's showing that maybe the cysteine is going in, it's creating glutathione, and they're getting used as fast as they're getting created, and that's why this is equal, but to make the phytochelates. So it looks like we have phytochelates, which are involved with the vacuole sequestration of arsenic in the roots. But that happened at an equal rate, it appeared, in both the accumulators and excluders. So it seems to be important in rice, but it was not explaining the differences in grain arsenic that we were seeing. What we did see that was different between the accumulators and excluders was in the leaves. Here we saw an increase in cysteine production and increase in glutathione production, but it was not causing an increase in phytochelatins. Unfortunately, we were not able to study these, but our hypothesis is that it's going here because it was not also going down here. It's not getting used more down here. It's getting used less down here. So what we think is the cysteine is going up, the glutathione was getting induced, and we're producing these GSH-AS adducts, which then can also be sequestered into vacuoles. As opposed to what was happening in the excluders, this was going up, but it was very late and small. This was staying the same. This was going down. So we don't know where this small increase was going, but because we just didn't see things change otherwise. So back to our farmer. He heard these results and said, okay, if sequestration of arsenic in the leaves is reducing grain arsenic, and sulfur is required for that sequestration process, can I reduce grain arsenic by adding sulfur fertilizer? That was his question. And he devised this plan. He talked to his chemical dealer and came up with, he was going to apply a foliar application of a potassium plus a sulfur fertilizer mixture onto his field. We apply chemicals with airplanes on our field, so he flew this. What he did is he had three fields, and he flew this chemical onto half the field on three different fields. He flew it on at boot, and the reason for that is it would merge with when he was applying for fungicides already. So he was able to mix this with his fungicides. He flew it on boot, therefore it didn't really cost him much more to have that plane out there. He wanted to apply it foliar rather than to the soil because there is a sulfur toxicity disease that we can have in rice also. And so he was not interested in applying the sulfur to the soil. He wanted to do it foliarly. Plus, we figured it got into the leaves faster this way. So he flew this on, and we saw that in two of his three fields, the treatment actually decreased the inorganic arsenic and decreased the total arsenic. So in this field, it decreased inorganic and total arsenic. This field, it decreased inorganic and total arsenic. But in the third field, it seemed to increase inorganic and total arsenic. We didn't understand why. Is it not working, or is it something else? We sat down and discussed it, and one of the things we learned is this field was unique to the other two in that it grew a little faster. The panicles were already emerged or further as opposed to sealed in their boots. So that one field where it did not work was when the chemical was applied at a physiological later stage than the other two. So that affected our design. When we decided to take this to replicated field plot research the next summer after the farmer's work, we sprayed the same farmer's concoction. I didn't want to play with the concoction. It seemed to work. I was going to use the very same thing. In fact, I went to he sent me his bags of fertilizer. I subsisted out of his bags of fertilizer. He used the very same bags of fertilizer for his 2016 test. We grew our fields, so we sprayed at boot. We sprayed late boot to split to emerging. Then we sprayed twice at panicle initiation and at boot. These are two fungal spray times in rice, so we decided to say, let's hit it twice instead of just once and see what happens. And then, of course, we had the zero control. We had three-row plots in our field so we could have the zero control right next to the twice-sprayed plot with some buffer rows in between. And they were interspersed in our study. So we had four replications of four different treatments three replications of four different treatments. We grew it in two different types of soil, native soil plus that arsenic amended soil that I talked about to see what would happen with normal arsenic versus high arsenic. And we used six different genotypes on this. One of which was one that we knew was an accumulator, one that took a lot of arsenic into the grains, and some that were excluders. Plus then the farmer was using a hybrid that I had never studied before. And then we studied a second hybrid that the farmers were using often in the fields. Now, this was expensive to do, because with 432 samples at $20 a sample, I still couldn't afford it. So what we decided to do was to look at the grains of the twice-strayed plants, and if we found a difference in grain arsenic there, we would get so much motivation that we could entice people to help fund the rest of the analysis. So that's where we started, was looking at control versus twice-sprayed grains. And what we found is that in the arsenic-added soil, yeah, you sure do increase your arsenic in the arsenic-added soil. But when you do treatment versus control, you don't see a big change. So treatment versus control, we did not see a difference in inorganic arsenic. We did not see a difference in total arsenic. So the treatment was not decreasing the grain arsenic. The question became, is this sulfur even getting into the plant? Do we have evidence of that? Yes, we have evidence of that because the grain sulfur contents were going up with treatment. Just that the grain arsenic was not going down. So the sulfur is getting in, but the arsenic's not going down. So then we went that same year, while I was busy doing the replicated field plot trial, the farmer was repeating. He used the very same field in two of these cases. He was able to use this one a third year. But what he did was he sprayed the other side of the field with that same treatment the next year. And what we found was, in truth, the differences that he saw in his first year were likely due to side of the field, because this year he decreased his total and inorganic arsenic with the treatment, but when he went to the other side of the field, the treatment increased inorganic arsenic and total arsenic. So I think he found a side of the field effect rather than a treatment effect. So no effect, no benefit from treating with this potassium sulfur fertilizer in either the farmer's field or in my replicated plot. That's the conclusion. No benefit from that. So even though there's a lot of building evidence that sulfur-mediated sequestration of arsenic is important, it does not seem to be that we can improve that by adding sulfur to our plants, at least not as we added them. Grain arsenic did go up. Now, I was interested in trying to improve potassium in the rice grains. Unfortunately, it did not go up at this boot spray time, so maybe if I sprayed later, we can get potassium up. But the one good thing for the farmers, we did find that one of his fields did consistently produce rice with concentrations of inorganic arsenic lower than Codex, so at least we found him a field that he can then shop around to Gerber and other baby food producers to see if he can get contract and get more, a little more money producing rice there. And we found that the hybrids really collect a lot more arsenic than the pure line varieties do. So if he does this, he's going to shop it around with a pure line variety on that field that we found to be consistently low arsenic for him. And that's my conclusion. Do we have any questions or have time for questions?
Yes. As you know, the difference between inorganic species and the methylated species is that the methylated species are very much more mobile towards the grain. But my question was whether phytochelates actually chelate both.
I've not done those studies, but the literature suggests that not, that the DMA appears to bypass the sequestration detoxification process and zip right up the plant. Now, I've not done labeling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have data, but there are literature reports indicating that that's what's happening with the DMA. I'm not as worried about it. That's why we were able to get inorganic arsenic at the last minute on us, but... Yes, over here.
You noted that phosphate blocks the uptake of arsenate, but not arsenite. Would phosphite be a blocker of arsenate?
I don't know. Does phosphite go in the same way? Aquaporin transport? I'd have to ask. I don't know. I'm a genetic, not the soil specialist. So.
All I know is there are byproducts of containing phosphite that are marketed as for various reasons.
Okay.
Just a quick comment to grain potassium. So potassium potentially deposits the stem, not the grain. So it's not surprising that it cannot get increased. When you analyze the stem, I'm sure you will find a lot of potassium in the stem.
Okay.
More stem elements.
Very stem concentrated. I was hoping somebody today would tell me this. And I thought, maybe I just sprayed too early. Yes. How much of a problem is arsenic in rice production? And he asked me to mention it state by state. And in truth, if I'm going to say state by state in the U.S., technically we have no problem. Rice in the U.S. is beneath the Codex level. And there was a little blip of international concern in marketing. Now, 60% of the rice grown in the U.S. is marketed overseas, and so we're very, very attuned to not just what is the U.S. consumer concerned about, but what is the international global consumer concerned about. For a while, there was some concern about U.S. rice having high arsenic content. It turned out to be the DMA rather than the inorganic arsenic, and so rice meets Codex in the U.S. They've tested 2,000 samples grown throughout the U.S., and they've all met, the FDA has done this, and they met the Codex, and so there is no regulation of arsenic in the U.S. Where there is some concern is in the baby food. They have a lower level set by Codex. It's 0.1 parts per million instead of 0.2 parts per million. So they have a lower level Codex set on them. And there is interest, therefore, in producing some rice for contract just to the baby food production system to meet their lower level of Codex. Right now, there's no rice under contract by the baby foods people. They are instead, there's a portion of Arkansas that has very steep slopes, and they don't flood the fields because what they do is they plant the rice. They call it row cropping rice. You can row crop rice. You plant it like wheat, you grow it like wheat. They build beds so that they can send water down the field through irrigation on a regular basis, but otherwise it's a very aerated system. And they find that when they buy rice at the mills located in those portions of Arkansas, they can get very low arsenic rice. As our mills in the U.S. mix rice from multiple fields that come in, it goes into one big bin and it gets mixed up. But as long as they buy it from a bin where those farmers are taking their rice to be sold to the mill, they can get low arsenic rice. So they're not contracting right now to the farmers. They're just going to certain mills to buy their rice.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Shannon, for a great talk.